May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, holy and loving God. Amen. Please be seated. Growing up on the central coast of California, it was only a matter of time before the ocean sucked me in. As a kid, we'd brave the frigid water on skim boards, boogie boards, and just about anything that served as an excuse to get in the water. When I was in eighth grade, I got my first proper surfboard. It was a 6'4" Channel Islands thruster. I loved it. It had the logo was like splatter paint pink, a vestige of the late 80s that was not quite as popular in the early 90s when I got it used. But that board ushered in a new era of my life, the surf era. Surfing continues to flavor everything I do. This is one of the ways that I connect with the divine. It takes me out of my head, draws me into nature, and restores my sanity. As a chaplain to University of California at Santa Barbara, surfing also helps me engage students who would otherwise have nothing to do with church. We have a program called Surfing and Spirituality. Every Wednesday morning, we head out people of all skill levels, people who have never been in the water at all, to people who have been surfing all their lives. And we head out in that time together as we're walking out in the pre-dawn, sharing all of our experiences, sharing what's going on in life is a holy time, as is our time in the water. I've seen students who have never been in the ocean in their lives stand up on a board and glide down the face of a wave. It is amazing. As I watch from behind the wave, their boards disappear, their faces light up, and it looks like they are walking on water. Today's gospel lesson is a favorite of water walkers like me. In a dawn patrol session with howling offshore winds, I imagine Jesus gracefully sliding across a wave, poised perfectly on the curling lip like Phil Edwards of old. This grace-filled moment comes when others are most afraid. When the storm is strongest, when the night is longest, the water dark and deep. Then comes Jesus with ghost-like grace, saying, "Do not be afraid." Yeah, right. Peter, of course, quickly shifts gears. However brazen or foolish Peter's petition might be, you have to admire his courage. He is willing to go. So I have two sons, Henry, who is 3.5, and Jimmy, who is just about to turn 2. And whenever Henry does something even mildly adventurous, like getting on a scooter or on a bike or whatever it is that they're doing that's crazy, Jimmy turns to me and looks up and says, "I try." He repeats it until he gets his chance. "I try, I try." This is Peter's "I try" moment. Peter asks, Jesus gives him the green light, and Peter goes for it, and he does it. He's up on a wave and riding down the line for the first time ever, and then, like every adventurous little brother before him, he eats it. And surreptitiously gives the broader culture the enduring colloquialism, "Ye of little faith." At its best, this phrase is an excellent celebration statement. You stick a landing on your skis, "Ye of little faith." Your friend fixes your remote, "Ye of little faith." At its worst, "Ye of little faith" feels shaming. It makes us feel small, inadequate, like God is disappointed in us, like we will never be enough. But Jesus is saying, do not shrivel up. Do not hide the love that is working in you to transform the world. Jesus doesn't reprimand Peter for asking to do something impossible. Rather, he says, you had it. Why did you doubt? At its heart, surfing involves participating in a power that is not one's own. It is true at every skill level. In our surfing and spirituality group, we have some folks that come out and learn really quickly. And those who do so, people who pick it up, aren't the ones who are the best athletes or the bravest. They're the people who trust. They're the folks who look for help. Other folks don't listen. There was a girl recently who went out to surf with me. We'll call her Petra. And she pedaled out just fine and was brave and went out, didn't want any instruction. And she turned for her first wave. And as it took her, she was overwhelmed and ditched her board and went sliding down the face of the wave. She came up fine. It was okay, but not the best introduction to surfing. Historically, this passage has shamed Peter for ditching his board. But today, here, we know that the story doesn't end there. Just as Peter is sinking, he cries out, Lord, save me. From that moment on, everything changes. Jesus catches them, they get into the boat, the wind stops. Like Peter, for most of us, the pivotal moments of life, the times that change us the most, are the moments of our deepest need. Getting sober, a cancer diagnosis, giving birth. Those pivotal moments are times of vulnerability that open us up, like falling in love or getting engaged. I hear some of that's going around. So many of life's greatest moments come as a surprise, and they bring us to our knees. Those of us who are attracted to the wilderness know all about this. We've all been there. You go out on a hike, it's perfectly clear, sunny, you're heading out, everything's fine, maybe you're at Jenny Lake, and suddenly the storm comes in and you're caught off guard. Maybe you're in the backcountry skiing and you lose a ski or binding breaks. This week, my brother was out visiting with his family this week, and we rented some bikes and went up Snow King and down the Skyline Trail, which is so gorgeous and beautiful. And as we were biking across the ridge, we had no map, of course, and as we were going, we knew that we wanted to somehow get to Cache Creek and work our way back into town. We didn't know exactly how the trail was going to go, and as we were way back in there, way past the point where we thought we would get to that Game Creek Trail, going through all those beautiful wildflowers. Oh, it's so beautiful up there. But as we were there, we stopped and we realized I had a slow leak in my tire. And of course, we'd forgotten the pump. You're going along in life and all of a sudden, you're in deep water. It's then that we turn to that great four-letter word, help. Lord, save me. Our focus shifts from the winds and the waves and turns to the ground of all being. A petition to a power that is not one's own. As Leonard Cohen put it in his song, Suzanne, Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water. And when he knew for certain only drowning men could see him, he said, all men will be sailors then until the sea shall free them. The Jesus way is ultimately not one of shock and awe. It's not a way of self-aggrandizement. It is a way of self-sacrifice, power made perfect in weakness. A way of sinking into the deepest depths for the sake of love. At first glance, today's Old Testament reading, this passage from Genesis, doesn't appear to have much at all in common with this gospel theme. It seems like a godless story of jealous and hateful men and their spoiled little brother. The epistle's a little closer. We get this great line from Romans, "Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved." I love it. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. But what does the reading from Genesis have to do with Jesus? What does this ancient text have to teach us here in Jackson, Wyoming in 2017? For me, the thread that binds these seemingly disparate pieces of fabric of Joseph and his brothers to the Jesus way is in the psalm, as we see that Joseph narrative weaving in and out, and we have that beautiful line, "Continue to seek God's face. Continue to seek God's face when you're asked to go searching for your brothers and sisters. Continue to seek God's face when you're forced to go the extra mile. Continue to seek God's face when you're thrown into the pit. Continue to seek God's face when you're sold off by the people you love. Continue to seek God's face when you lose your job, when your country is on the cusp of war, when racial tension erupts in violence on the streets of Charlottesville. Continue to seek God's face. For there's a promise that must be fulfilled by you and you alone." On the balcony outside of room 306 at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, the site where the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed, there's a plaque that reads, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." As I watched the violence erupt in Charlottesville, I thought of Dr. King. I thought of the videos that spread around the world of fire hoses and German shepherds turned on protesters in Alabama. These times, like those times, are tumultuous. They leave us feeling stranded in deep water. But I also think of King's dream. I think of King's way, the Jesus way, the path of nonviolence, a path of urgency, a way of power, but it is power made perfect in weakness. Like King, like Joseph, like Peter, each of us has a dream. Each of us has our own work to do, work that can draw us all to that love eternal. For most of us, the work ahead is less like walking on water and more like enduring hardships. Our work, those dreams, are inextricably linked to others. We do not go alone. But when you feel alone, when you find yourself sinking, when you are afraid, remember the psalmist's advice. Continue to seek God's face and listen for the voice of the one who said, "Take heart. It is I. Do not be afraid." Amen.